that stuff comes here. It was clearly a bunch of rogue officers on a jag of their own, and the investigation most likely served to warn them off. They probably quit. Border Patrol has a pretty good turnover of staff. The bad guys? Could be anywhere by now. Literally. Probably left the state altogether. It's not just the immigrants who flow north. It would make you look good. Walker shrugged. I'm sure it would. A lot of things would make me look good. But I do have some standards, Reacher. It would be a total waste of public money. Grandstanding, pure and simple. It wouldn't get anywhere, nowhere at all. They're long gone. It's ancient history. 12 years ago isn't ancient history. It is around here. Things change fast. Right now, I'm concentrating on what happened in Echo last night, not 12 years ago. Okay, Reacher said. Your decision. I'll call Alice in the morning when we get the material we need. Could be all over by lunchtime. Let's hope so. Yeah, let's, Walker said. Reacher went out through the hot, trapped air in the stairwell and stepped outside. It was hotter still on the sidewalk. So hot, it was difficult to breathe properly. It felt like all the oxygen molecules had been burned out of the air. He made it across the street and down to the mission with sweat running into his eyes. He pushed in through the door and found Alice sitting alone at her desk. You back already? He asked, surprised. She just nodded. Did you see her? She nodded again. What did she say?
Nothing at all, Alice said, except she doesn't want me to represent her.
What do you mean?
What I said. Literally, the only words I got out of her were, and I quote, I refuse to be represented by you.
Why?
She didn't say. She said nothing at all.
I just told you that.
Except she doesn't want me on the case.
Why the hell not?
Alice just shrugged and said nothing.
Has this kind of a thing ever happened before?
Alice shook her head.
Not to me. Not to anybody within living memory in this place. Normally, they can't make their minds up whether to bite your hand off or smother you with hugs and kisses.
So what the hell happened?
I don't know. She was fairly calm, fairly rational.
Did you try to persuade her?
Of course I did, to a point, but I wanted to get out of there before she lost it and started hollering. A witness hears her say it, I lose all standing, and then she's really in trouble. I plan to go back and try again later.
Did you tell her I sent you?
Sure I did. I used your name, Reacher this, Reacher that. Made no difference. All she said was, she refused representation. Over and over again, 3 or 4 times. Then she gave me the silent treatment.
Can you think of a reason?
Alice shrugged.
Not really, in the circumstances. I mean, I'm not exactly Perry Mason. Maybe I don't inspire much confidence. I go in there half naked and sweating like a pig. And if this was Wall Street or somewhere, I could understand somebody taking one look and thinking, wow, like, forget about it. But this isn't Wall Street. This is Pecos County Jail, and she's Hispanic, and I'm a lawyer with a pulse, so she should have been dancing with joy I came at all.
So why?
It's inexplicable.
What happens now?
Now, it's a balancing act. I have to get her to accept representation before anybody hears her refuse it.
And if she still doesn't?
Then I go about my business, and she's completely on her own. Until 6 months from now, when the indictment's in and some crony of the judge's sends some useless jerk to see her. Reacher was quiet for a moment.
I'm sorry, Alice. I had no idea this would happen.
Not your fault.
Go back about 7, okay? He said. When the upstairs offices are empty, and before the night shift woman comes on. She struck me as nosier than the day guy. He probably won't pay too much attention. So you can press her some. Let her holler if she wants to.
Okay, she said. 7 o'clock it is. Hell of a day. Up and down like a roller coaster.
Like life itself, Reacher said. She smiled briefly.
Where will I find you?
I'm in the last motel before the highway.
You like traffic noise?
I like cheap. Room 11, name of Millard Fillmore.
Why?
Habit, he said. I like aliases. I like anonymity.
So, who is Millard Fillmore?
President. 2 before Abraham Lincoln, from New York.
She was quiet for a moment. Should I dress up like a lawyer for her? You think that might make a difference?
Reacher shrugged. I doubt it. Look at me. I look like a scarecrow, and she never said anything about it.
Alice smiled again. You do, a little, you know. I saw you come in this morning, and I thought you were the client. Some kind of homeless guy in trouble.
This is a new outfit, Reacher said. Fresh, today.
She looked him over again and said nothing. He left her with paperwork to do and walked as far as the pizza parlor south of the courthouse. It was nearly full with people and had a huge air conditioner over the door, spilling a continuous stream of moisture on the sidewalk. Clearly, it was the coldest place in town, and therefore, right then, the most popular. He went in and got the last table and drank ice water as fast as the busboy could refill his glass. Then he ordered an anchovy pizza, heavy on the fish. He figured his body needed to replace salt. As he ate it, a new description was being passed by phone to the killing crew. The call was carefully rerouted through Dallas and Las Vegas to a motel room 100 miles from Pecos. The call was made by a man, speaking quietly but clearly. It contained a detailed identification of a new target, a male, starting with his full name and his age, and accompanied by an exact rundown of his physical appearance and all of his likely destinations within the next 48 hours. The information was taken by the woman, because she had sent her partners out to eat. She made no notes. She was naturally cautious about leaving written evidence, and she had an excellent memory. It had been honed by constant practice. She listened carefully until the caller stopped talking, and then she decided the crew's price. She wasn't reluctant to speak on the phone. She was talking through an electronic device bought in the valley that made her sound like a robot with a head cold. So she named the price and then listened to the silence on the other end, listened to the guy deciding whether to negotiate the cost. But he didn't, just said, okay, and hung up. The woman smiled. Smart guy, she thought.
Her crew didn't work for cheapskates. A parsimonious attitude about money betrayed all kinds of other negative possibilities. Reacher had ice cream after the pizza, and more water, and then coffee. He lingered over it as long as was reasonable, and then he paid his check and walked back to his motel room. The heat felt worse than ever after being cold and dry for an hour. He took a long shower in tepid water and rinsed his clothes in the sink, shook them hard to eliminate the wrinkles, and arranged them on a chair to dry. Then he turned the room air to high and lay down on the bed to wait for Alice. Checked his watch. He figured if she got there any time after 8 o'clock, it would be a good sign, because if Carmen decided to get serious, they would need to talk for at least an hour. He closed his eyes and tried to sleep. 13. She got there at 7:20. He woke from a feverish, overheated doze and heard a tentative knock at his door. Rolled off the bed and wrapped a damp towel around his waist and padded barefoot across the dirty carpet and opened up. Alice was standing there. He looked at her. She just shook her head. He stared out at the dusk light for a second. Her yellow car was parked in the lot. He turned and stepped back into the room. She followed him inside.
"I tried everything," she said.
She had changed back into her lawyer outfit, the black pants and the jacket. The pants had a very high waistband, so high it almost met the bottom edge of the sports bra. There was an inch of tanned midriff showing. Apart from that, she looked exactly like the real deal. And he couldn't see how an inch of skin would be significant to a woman in Carmen's position.
"I asked her. Was it me?" Alice said. "Did she want somebody different? Older? A man? A Hispanic person?"
"What did she say?"
"She said she didn't want anybody at all."
"That's crazy."
"Yes, it is," Alice said. "I described her predicament, you know, in case she wasn't seeing it clearly. It made no difference."
"Tell me everything," she said.
"I already have."
Richard was uncomfortable in the towel. It was too small. "Let me put my pants on," he said. He scooped them off the chair and ducked into the bathroom. The pants were wet and clammy. He pulled them on and zipped them up. Came back out. Alice had taken her jacket off and laid it on the chair, next to his wet shirt. She was sitting on the bed with her elbows on her knees.
"I tried everything," she said again. "I said, 'Show me your arm.' She said, 'What for?' I said, 'I want to see how good your veins are, because that's where the lethal injection will go.' I told her she'd be strapped down on the gurney. I described the drugs she'd get. I told her about the people behind the glass, there to watch her die."
"And?"
"It made no difference at all. Like talking to the wall."
"How hard did you push?"
"I shouted a little, but she waited me out and just repeated herself. She's refusing representation, Reacher. We better face it."
"Is that kosher?"
"Of course it is. No law says you have to have counsel, just that you have to be offered counsel."
"Isn't it evidence of insanity or something?"
She shook her head. "Not in itself," she said. "Otherwise, every murderer would just refuse to have a lawyer and automatically get off with an incapacity defense."
"She's not a murderer."
"She doesn't seem very anxious to prove it."
"Did anybody hear her?"
"Not yet, but I'm worried. Logically, her next move is to put it in writing. Then I can't even get in the door. Nor can anybody else."
"So what do we do?"
"We have to finesse her.
That's all we can do.
We just have to ignore her completely and keep on dealing with Walker behind her back, on her behalf. If we can get him to drop the charges, then we've set her free whether she wants us to or not."
He shrugged. "And that's what we'll do.
But it's completely bizarre, isn't it?
It sure is, Alice said. I never heard of such a thing before.
100 miles away, the two male members of the killing crew returned to their motel after eating dinner. They had chosen pizza, too, but with pitchers of cold beer instead of water and coffee. They found their woman partner waiting for them inside their room. She was alert and pacing, which they recognized as a sign of news.
What?
The tall man asked.
A supplementary job, she said.
Where?
Pecos.
Is that smart?
She nodded.
Pecos is still safe enough.
You think?
The dark man asked.
Wait until you hear what he's paying.
When?
Depends on the prior commitment.
Okay, the tall man said. Who's the target?
Just some guy,
the woman said.
I'll give you the details when we've done the other thing.
She walked to the door.
Stay inside now, she said. Get to bed. Get some sleep. We've got a very busy day coming up. This is a crummy room,
Alice said. Reacher glanced around.
You think?
It's awful.
I've had worse.
She paused a beat.
You want dinner?
He was full of pizza and ice cream, but the inch of midriff was attractive. So was the corresponding inch of her back. There was a deep cleft there. The waistband of the pants spanned it like a tiny bridge.
Sure, he said. Where?
She paused again.
My place,
she said.
It's difficult for me to eat out around here. I'm a vegetarian, so usually I cook for myself.
Vegetarian in Texas, he said. You're a long way from home.
Sure feels like it, she said. So how about it? And I've got better air conditioning than this.
He smiled.
Woman cooked food and better air? Sounds good to me.
You eat vegetarian?
I eat anything.
So let's go.
He shrugged his damp shirt on. She picked up her jacket. He found his shoes, locked up the room, and followed her over to the car. She drove a couple of miles west to a low-rise residential complex built on a square of scrubby land, trapped between 2 four-lane roads. The buildings had stucco walls painted the color of sand, with dark, stained wooden beams stuck all over the place for accents. There were maybe 40 rental units, and they all looked half-hearted and beaten down by the heat. Hers was right in the center, like a small city townhouse sandwiched between two others. She parked outside her door on a fractured concrete pad. There were parched desert weeds wilting in the cracks. But it was gloriously cool inside the house. There was central air running hard. He could feel the pressure it was creating. There was a narrow living room with a kitchen area in back, a staircase on the left, cheap, rented furniture, and a lot of books. No television.
I'm going to shower, she said. Make yourself at home.
She disappeared up the stairs. He took a look around. The books were mostly law texts, the civil and criminal codes of Texas, some constitutional commentaries. There was a phone on a side table with 4 speed dials programmed. Top slot was labeled Work. Second was J Home. Third was J Work. Fourth was M and D. On one of the bookshelves, there was a photograph in a silver frame showing a handsome couple who could have been in their middle 50s. It was a casual outdoors shot in a city. Probably New York. The man had gray hair and a long, patrician face. The woman looked a little like an older version of Alice herself. Same hair, minus the color and the youthful bounce. The Park Avenue parents, no doubt. Mom and Dad. M and D. They looked okay. He figured Jay was probably a boyfriend. He checked, but there was no photograph of him. Maybe his picture was upstairs, next to her bed. He sat in a chair, and she came back down within 10 minutes. Her hair was wet and combed, and she was wearing shorts again with a T-shirt that probably said Harvard Soccer, except it had been washed so many times the writing was nearly illegible. The shorts were short, and the T-shirt was thin and tight. She had dispensed with the sports bra. That was clear. She was barefoot and looked altogether sensational.
"You played soccer?" he asked.
"My partner did," she said.
He smiled at the warning.
"Does he still?"
"He's a she. Judith, I'm gay. And yes, she still plays."
"She any good?"
"As a partner."
"As a soccer player?"
"She's pretty good. Does it bother you?"
"That she's pretty good at soccer?"
"No, that I'm gay."
"Why would it?"
Alice shrugged.
"It bothers some people."
"Not this one."
"I'm Jewish, too."
Reacher smiled.
"Did your folks buy you the handgun?"
She glanced at him.
"You found that?"
"Sure," he said. "Nice piece."
She nodded.
"A gay, Jewish, vegetarian woman from New York? They figured I should have it."
Reacher smiled again. "I'm surprised they didn't get you a machine gun or a grenade launcher."
She smiled back.
"I'm sure they thought about it."
"You obviously take your atoning seriously. You must feel like I did walking around in the Lebanon."
She laughed.
"Actually, it's not so bad here. Texas is a pretty nice place overall. Some great people, really."
"What does Judith do?"
"She's a lawyer, too. She's in Mississippi right now."
"Same reasons?"
Alice nodded.
"A 5-year plan."
"There's hope for the legal profession yet."
"So it doesn't bother you," she said, "that it's just a meal with a new friend and then back to the motel on your own?"
"I never thought it would be anything else," he lied.
The meal was excellent. It had to be, because he wasn't hungry. It was some kind of a homemade, dark, chewy confection made out of crushed nuts bound together with cheese and onions. Probably full of protein. Maybe some vitamins, too. They drank a little wine and a lot of water with it. He helped her clear up, and then they talked until 11.
"I'll drive you back," she said.
But she was barefoot and comfortable, so he shook his head. "I'll walk," he said. "A couple of miles would do me good."
"It's still hot," she said.
"Don't worry, I'll be okay."
She didn't put up much of a protest. He arranged to meet her at the mission in the morning and said goodnight. The outside air was as thick as soup. The walk took 40 minutes, and his shirt was soaked again when he got back to the motel. He woke early in the morning and rinsed his clothes and put them on wet. They were dry by the time he reached the law offices. The humidity had gone, and the hot desert air sucked the moisture right out of them and left them as stiff as new canvas. The sky was blue and completely empty. Alice was already at her usual desk in a black, A-line dress with no sleeves. A Mexican guy was occupying one of her client chairs. He was talking quietly to her. She was writing on a yellow pad. The young intern from Hack Walker's office was waiting patiently behind the Mexican guy's shoulder. He was holding a thin orange and purple FedEx packet in his hand. Reacher took a place right behind him. Alice was suddenly aware of the gathering crowd and looked up. Sketched a surprised, just a minute gesture in the air, and turned back to her client. Eventually, put her pencil down and spoke quietly in Spanish. The guy responded with stoic, blank-faced patience, and stood up and shuffled away. The intern moved forward and laid the FedEx packet on the desk.
"Common Greer's medical reports," he said. "These are the originals. Mr. Walker took copies. He wants a conference at 9:30.
"We'll be there," Alice said.
She pulled the packet slowly toward her. The intern followed the Mexican guy out. Reacher sat down in the client chair. Alice glanced at him, her fingers resting on the packet, a puzzled expression on her face. He shrugged. The packet was a lot thinner than he had expected, too. She unfolded the flap and pressed the edges of the packet inward so it opened like a mouth, held it up, and spilled the contents on the desk. There were four separate reports packed loose in individual green covers. Each cover was marked with Carmen's name and her social security number and a patient reference. There were dates on all of them. The dates ranged back more than 6 years. The older the date, the paler the cover, like the green color had faded out with age. Reacher slid his chair around the desk and put it next to Alice's. She stacked the four reports in date order, with the oldest at the top of the pile. She opened it up and nudged it left, so it was exactly between them. Then she moved her chair a fraction, so her shoulder was touching his.
"Okay," she said. "So let's see."
The first report was about Ellie's birth. The whole thing was timed in hours and minutes. There was a lot of gynecological stuff about dilation and contractions. Fetal monitors had been attached. An epidural anesthetic had been administered at 4:13 in the morning. It had been judged fully effective by 4:20. There had been a delivery room shift change at 6. Labor had continued until the following lunchtime. Accelerants had been used. An episiotomy had been performed at 1:00. Ellie had been born at 5:25. No complications. Normal delivery of the placenta. The episiotomy had been stitched immediately. The baby was pronounced viable in every respect. There was no mention of facial bruising or a split lip or loosened teeth. The second report concerned two cracked ribs. It was dated in the spring, 15 months after childbirth. There was an X-ray film attached. It showed the whole left side of her upper torso. The ribs were bright white. Two of them had tiny gray cracks. Her left breast was a neat, dark shape. The attending physician had noted that the patient reported being thrown from a horse and landing hard against the top rail of a section of ranch fencing. As was usual with rib injuries, there was nothing much to be done except bind them tight and recommend plenty of physical rest.
"What do you think?"
Alice asked.
"Could be something," Reacher said.
The third report was dated 6 months later, at the end of the summer. It concerned severe bruising to Carmen's lower right leg. The same physician noted she reported falling from a horse while jumping and landing with her shin against the pole that constituted the obstacle the horse was attempting. There was a long technical description of the contusion, with measurements vertically and laterally. The affected area was a tilted oval, 4 inches wide and 5 long. X-rays had been taken. The bone was not fractured. Painkillers had been prescribed, and the first day's supply provided from the emergency room pharmacy. The fourth report was dated 2.5 years later, which was maybe 9 months before Sloop went to prison. It showed a broken collarbone on the right side. All the names in the file were new. It seemed like the whole ER staff had turned over. There was a new name for the attending physician, and she made no comment about Carmen's claim to have fallen off her horse onto the rocks of the mesa. There were extensive, detailed notes about the injury. They were very thorough. There was an X-ray film. It showed the curve of her neck and her shoulder. The collarbone was cleanly snapped in the middle. Alice squared all four reports together, upside down on the desk.
"Well?"
she said. Reacher made no reply, just shook his head.
"Well?"
she said again. "Maybe she sometimes went to another hospital," he said.
"No, we'd have picked it up. I told you we ask at all of them. Matter of routine."
"Maybe they drove out of state."
"We checked,"
she said.
"Domestic violence? We cover all neighboring states. I told you that, too. Routine guidelines."
"Maybe she used another name."
"They're logged by Social Security number."
He nodded. "This isn't enough, Alice. She told me about more than this. We've got the ribs and we've got the collarbone, but she claimed he broke her arm, too. Also her jaw. She said she had had 3 teeth re-implanted." Alice said nothing. He closed his eyes, tried to think about it like he would have in the old days, an experienced investigator with a suspicious mind and 13 years of hard time behind him. "Two possibilities," he said. "One, the hospital records system screwed up." Alice shook her head.
"Very unlikely."
He nodded again. "Agreed. So, two, she was lying." Alice was quiet for a long moment.
"Exaggerating, maybe,"
she said.
"You know, to lock you in, to make sure of your help."
He nodded again, vaguely, checked his watch. It was 9:20. He leaned sideways and slipped the stacked reports back into the FedEx packet. "Let's go see what Hack thinks," he said. 2/3 of the killing crew rolled south out of Pecos, uncharacteristically quiet. The third member waited in the motel room, pensive. They were taking risks now. 12 years in the business, and they had never worked one area so long. It had always seemed too dangerous. In and out, quick and clean, had been their preferred method. Now they were departing from it. Radically. So there had been no conversation that morning. No jokes, no banter, no pre-mission excitement, just a lot of nervous preoccupation with private thoughts. But they had readied the car on schedule and assembled the things they would need. Then they had half-eaten breakfast and sat quiet, checking their watches.
9:20,
the woman said eventually.
"It's time."
There was a visitor already seated in Walker's office. He was a man of maybe 70, overweight and florid, and he was suffering badly in the heat. The air conditioners were going so hard that the rush of air was audible over the drone of the motors, and papers were lifting off the desk. But the indoor temperature was still somewhere in the middle 90s. The visitor was mopping his brow with a large white handkerchief. Walker himself had his jacket off and was sitting absolutely still in his chair, with his head in his hands. He had copies of the medical reports laid side by side on his desk, and he was staring at them like they were written in a foreign language. He looked up blankly, and then he made a vague gesture toward the stranger.
"This is Gown Black," he said. "Eminent professor of forensic medicine. Lots of other things, too. The renowned defense expert. This is probably the first time he's ever been in a DA's office."
Alice stepped over and shook the guy's hand.
"I'm very pleased to meet you, sir," she said. "I've heard a lot about you."
Cowan Black said nothing. Alice introduced Reacher, and they all shuffled their chairs into an approximate semicircle around the desk.
"The reports came in first thing this morning," Walker said. "Everything on file from Texas, which was one hospital only. There was nothing at all from New Mexico, Oklahoma, Arkansas, or Louisiana. I personally photocopied everything and immediately sent the originals over to you. Dr. Black arrived a half hour ago and has studied the copies. He wants to see the X-rays, those I couldn't copy."
Reacher passed the FedEx packet to Black, who spilled the contents the same way Alice had, and extracted the three X-ray films, the ribs, the leg, the collarbone. He held them up against the light from the window and studied them, one by one, for minutes each. Then he slipped them back in their appropriate folders, neatly, like he was a man accustomed to order and precision. Walker sat forward.
"So, Dr. Black, are you able to offer us a preliminary opinion?"
He sounded tense and very formal, like he was already in court. Black picked up the first folder. The oldest, the palest, the one about Ellie's birth.
"This is nothing at all," he said. His voice was deep and dark and rotund, like a favorite uncle in an old movie, a perfect voice for the witness stand. "This is purely routine obstetrics. Interesting only in that a rural Texas hospital was operating at a level that would have been considered state-of-the-art a decade or so earlier."
"Nothing untoward?"
"Nothing at all. One assumes the husband caused the pregnancy. But aside from that, there's no evidence he did anything to her."
"The others?" Black switched files to the damaged ribs, pulled the X-ray film out, and held it ready.
"Ribs are there for a purpose," he said. "They form a hard, bony, protective cage to protect the vulnerable internal organs from damage, but not a rigid cage. That would be foolish, and evolution isn't a foolish process. No, the rib cage is a sophisticated structure. If it were rigid, the bones would shatter under any kind of severe blow. But there's complex ligament suspension involved at each of the bone terminations, so the cage's first response is to yield and distort in order to spread the force of the impact."
He held up the X-ray film and pointed here and there on it.
"And that's exactly what happened here," he said. "There is obvious stretching and tearing of the ligaments all over the place. This was a heavy, diffuse blow with a broad, blunt instrument. The force was dissipated by the flexibility of the rib cage, but even so was sufficient to crack two of the bones."
"What kind of a blunt instrument?" Walker asked.
"Something long and hard and rounded, maybe 5 or 6 inches in diameter. Something exactly like a fencing rail, I would think."
"It couldn't have been a kick?" Black shook his head.
"Emphatically, no," he said. A kick transfers a lot of energy through a tiny contact area. The welt at the toe of a boot is, what, maybe an inch and a half by a quarter inch? That's essentially a sharp object, not a blunt object. It would be too sudden and too concentrated for the yielding effect to operate. We would see the cracked bones, for sure, but we wouldn't see the ligaments stretching at all. What about a knee? A knee in the ribs. That's similar to a punch. Blunt, but an essentially circular impact site. The ligament stretching would show a completely different pattern.
Walker drummed his fingers on his desk. He was starting to sweat.
Anyway, a person could have done it? He asked.
Black shrugged.
If he were some kind of contortionist, maybe. If he could hold his whole leg completely rigid and somehow jump up and hit her in the side with it, like it was a fence railing, I would say it was completely impossible.
Walker went quiet for a second.
What about the bruised shin? He asked.
Black swapped the third file into his hand, opened it, and read through the description of the contusion again. Then he shook his head.
The shape of the bruise is crucial, he said. Again, it's what you'd get from the impact of a long, hard, rounded object. Like a fence rail again, or maybe a sewer pipe, striking against the front of the shin at an oblique angle. Could he have hit her with a length of pipe?
Black shrugged again.
Theoretically, I suppose, he said. If he was standing almost behind her, and somehow could reach over her, and he swung a hard downward blow, and struck her almost but not quite parallel with her leg, he'd have to do it two-handed, because nobody can hold a 6-inch diameter pipe one-handed. Probably he'd have to stand on a chair and position her very carefully in front of it. It's not very likely, is it? But is it possible? No, Black said. It isn't possible. I say that now, and I'd certainly have to say it under oath.
Walker was quiet again. What about the collarbone? He asked. Black picked up the last report.
These are very detailed notes, he said. Clearly, an excellent physician.
But what do they tell you?
It's a classic injury, Black said. The collarbone is like a circuit breaker. A person falls, and they try to break their fall by throwing out their hand. Their whole body weight is turned into a severe physical impact that travels upward as a shock wave through their rigid arm, through their rigid shoulder joint, and onward. Now, if it wasn't for the collarbone, that force would travel into the neck and probably break it, causing paralysis, or into the brain pan, causing unconsciousness. Maybe a chronic comatose state. But evolution is smart, and it chooses the least of all the evils. The collarbone snaps, thereby dissipating the force. Inconvenient and painful, to be sure, but not life-threatening. A mechanical circuit breaker, and generations of bicyclists and inline skaters and horseback riders a very good reason to be grateful for it.
Falling can't be the only way, Walker said.
It's the main way, Black said, and almost always the only way. But occasionally I've seen it happen other ways, too. A downward blow with a baseball bat aimed at the head might miss and break the collarbone. Falling beams in a burning building might impact against the top of the shoulder. I've seen that with firefighters.
Cameron Greer wasn't a firefighter, Walker said. And there's no evidence a baseball bat was involved any other time.
Nobody spoke. The roar of the air conditioners filled the silence.
Okay, Walker said. Let me put it this way. I need evidence that there was violent physical abuse against this woman. Is there any here?
Black went quiet for a spell, then he simply shook his head.
No, he said. Not within the bounds of reasonable likelihood. None at all. Not even a shred? No,
I'm afraid not.
Stretching the bounds of reasonable likelihood?
There's nothing there.
Stretching the bounds all the way until they break? Still nothing. She had a normal pregnancy, and she was an unlucky horseback rider. That's all I see here. No reasonable doubt, Walker said. That's all I need. Just a shred will do. It's not there.
Walker paused a beat.
Doctor, please let me say this with the greatest possible respect, okay? From a DA's point of view, you've been a pain in the rear end many more times than I can remember, to me and to my colleagues throughout the state. There have been times when we're not sure what you've been smoking. You've always been capable of coming up with the most bizarre explanations for almost anything. So I'm asking you, please, is there any way at all you could interpret this stuff differently?
Black didn't answer.
I'm sorry, Walker said. I offended you.
Not in the way you think you did, Black said.
The fact is, I've never offered a bizarre explanation of anything. If I see possible exoneration, I speak up in court. Sure. But what you clearly fail to understand is, if I don't see possible exoneration, then I don't speak up at all. What your colleagues and I have clashed over in the past is merely the tip of the iceberg. Cases that have no merit don't get to trial, because I advise the defense to plead them out and hope for mercy. And I see many, many cases that have no merit.
Cases like this one?
Black nodded. I'm afraid so. If I had been retained by Ms. Aaron directly, I would tell her that her client's word is not to be trusted. And you're right. I say that very reluctantly, with a long and honorable record of preferring to take the defense's side, which is a record I have always maintained, despite the attendant risk of annoying our district's attorneys. And which is a record I always aim to continue, for as long as I am spared. Which might not be much longer if this damn heat keeps up.
He paused a second and looked around.
For which reason, I must take my leave of you now, he said. I'm very sorry I was unable to help you, Mr. Walker.
Really, it would have been enormously satisfying.
He squared the reports together and slipped them back into the FedEx packet, handed it to Reacher, who was nearest. Then he stood up and headed for the door.
But there has to be something, Walker said. I don't believe this. The one time in my life I want Cowan Black to come up with something, and he can't.
Black shook his head. I learned a long time ago. Sometimes, they're just guilty. He sketched a brief gesture that was half wave, half salute, and walked slowly out of the office. The breeze from the air conditioners caught the door and crashed it shut behind him. Alice and Reacher said nothing, just watched Walker at his desk. Walker dropped his head into his hands and closed his eyes.
Go away, he said. Just get the hell out of here and leave me alone.
The air in the stairwell was hot, and it was worse still out on the sidewalk. Reacher swapped the FedEx packet into his left hand and caught Alice's arm with his right, stopped her at the curb.
Is there a good jeweler in town?
He asked. I guess, she said. Why?
I want you to sign out her personal property. You're still her lawyer, as far as anybody knows. We'll get her ring appraised. Then we'll find out if she's telling the truth about anything.
You've still got doubts?
I'm from the army. First we check, then we double check.
Okay, she said, if you want. They turned around and walked down the alley, and she took possession of Carmen's lizard skin belt and her ring by signing a form that specified both items as material evidence. Then they went looking for a jeweler. They walked away from the cheap streets and found one 10 minutes later in a row of upmarket boutiques. The window display was too crowded to be called elegant, but judging by the price tags, the owner had a feel for quality.
Or for blind optimism.
So how do we do this?
Alice asked. Make out it's an estate sale, Reacher said. Maybe it belonged to your grandmother. The guy in the store was old and stooped. He might have looked pretty sharp 40 years ago, but he still acted sharp. Reacher saw a flash in his eyes. Cops? Then he saw him answer his own question in the negative. Alice didn't look like a cop. Neither did Reacher, which was a mistaken impression he'd traded on for years. Then the guy went into an assessment of how smart these new customers might be. It was transparent, at least to Reacher. He was accustomed to watching people make furtive calculations. He saw him decide to proceed with caution. Alice produced the ring and told him she'd inherited it from family, told him she was thinking of selling it, if the price was right. The guy held it under a desk lamp and put a loop in his eye.
Gala, Clarency, Cut, and Carrot, he said. The four C's. That's what we look for.
He turned the stone left and right. It flashed in the light. He picked up a slip of stiff card that had circular holes punched through it. They started small and got bigger. He fitted the stone in the holes until he found one that fit exactly.
2¼ carats, he said. Cut is real handsome. Color is good, maybe just on the yellow side of truly excellent. Clarity isn't flawless, but it's not very far off. This stone ain't bad. Not bad at all. How much do you want for it?
Whatever it's worth, Alice said.
I could give you 20,
the guy said.
20 what?
$1,000, the guy said.
$20,000.
The guy put up his hands, palms out, defensively.
I know, he said. Someone probably told you it's worth more. And maybe it is. Retail, some big fancy store, Dallas or somewhere. But this is Pecos, and you're selling, not buying, and I have to make my profit.
I'll think about it, Alice said. 25, the guy said. $25,000. The guy nodded. That's about as high as I can go, being fair to myself. I got to eat, after all.
Let me think about it, Alice said.
Well, don't think too long, the guy said. The market might change, and I'm the only game in town. Piece like this, it'll scare anybody else.
They stopped together on the sidewalk right outside the store. Alice was holding the ring like it was red hot. Then she opened her pocketbook and put it in a zippered compartment, used her fingertips to push it all the way down.
Guy like that says 25. It's got to be worth 60, Reacher said. Maybe more. Maybe a lot more. My guess is he's not the Better Business Bureau's poster boy.
A lot more than $30, anyway, Alice said.
A fake? Cubic zirconium?
He's playing us for fools.
He nodded vaguely. He knew she meant playing you for a fool. He knew she was too polite to say it.
Let's go, he said.
They walked west through the heat, back to the cheap part of town, beyond the courthouse, next to the railroad tracks. It was about a mile, and they spent 30 minutes on it. It was too hot to hurry. He didn't speak the whole way, just fought his usual interior battle about exactly when to give up on a lost cause. He stopped her again at the door to the mission.
I want to try one last thing, he said.
Why?
She asked.
Because I'm from the army, he said. First we double-check, then we triple-check.
She sighed. A little impatience there.
What do you want to do?
You need to drive me.
Where?
There's an eyewitness we can talk to.
An eyewitness? Where?
In school. Down in Echo.
The kid?
He nodded. Ellie. She's sharp as a tack.
She's 6 years old.
If it was happening, I'll bet she knows.
Alice stood completely still for a second. Then she glanced in through the windows. The place was crowded with customers. They looked listless from the heat and beaten down by life.
It's not fair to them, she said. I need to move on.
Just this one last thing.
I'll lend you the car again. You can go alone. He shook his head.
I need your opinion. You're the lawyer. And I won't get in the schoolhouse without you. You've got status. I haven't.
I can't do it. It'll take all day.
How long would it have taken to get the money from the rancher? How many billable hours?
We don't bill.
You know what I mean.
She was quiet for a moment.
Okay, she said. A deal's a deal, I guess.
This is the last thing, I promise.
Why, exactly?
She asked. They were in the yellow VW, heading south on the empty road out of Pecos. He recognized none of the landmarks. It had been dark when he came the other way in the back of the police cruiser.
Because I was an investigator, he said.
Okay, she said. Investigators investigate. That I can follow. But don't they stop investigating? I mean, ever? When they know already?
Investigators never know, he said. They feel and they guess.
I thought they dealt in facts.
Not really, he said. I mean, eventually they do, I suppose. But 99% of the time, it's 99% about what you feel. About people. A good investigator is a person with a feel for people.
Feeling doesn't change black into white.
He nodded. No, it doesn't.